Blog Talk Radio.
I don't know where Stacy is this morning. Normally, we'd have been on talked about everything this morning, but I haven't seen her this morning. Don't know where she at. Hopefully, she probably be here in a little bit. If not, the show goes on. This week, we're going to be talking about affordable housing and transportation. This is a big issue in the metro Atlanta area. And in many other metro areas across the nation. So we're going to delve into that issue. But we also have our opening segment, Teachable Moments. And since Stacey's not here to lead off with Teachable Moments this morning, I'm going to lead it off myself. One of the things that has been, like, really getting to me, as we have a discourse here about different things, is that we have all these different words and ways we want to explain different things. And as we're going to be talking about affordable housing and transportation, I read an interesting article on gentrification earlier this week. And it was interesting in the comment section how some of the spin was taking place, because, you know, there are some— usually gentrification, when it first starts, is thrown in one point from the standpoint of, okay, this is good economic development, this is better in our communities, this, that, and this is how it's usually sold to the folks in that community. However, it ends up on the back end, it ends up pushing people out. We got the Darlington situation in upper Midtown. We got these problems taking place in the SWATs around Sylvan Hills, Adair Park, whatnot. And we really need to have this discussion on why gentrification takes place and what's going on. I got a caller early. First thing in the show, let's take this to caller. Good morning, caller. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, on the subject of affordable housing, and you just made a question about gentrification. Gentrification takes place because you have areas that have a lot of condemnation, and they are just deplorable that something has to be done with these areas. And the people that's in those areas and staying in some of these turn-of-the-century houses don't have the ability. And really, it's not even worth it to bring these places up to code. They are energy inefficient and so on and so on. They're just completely outmoded. So they have to be done away with. Now, in many areas where they would take old factories and they would build units within those factories, buildings, you know, manufacturing like they have. I'm around the St. Louis area. Well, those rehabs are brought back in a modern and efficient, code-compliant way. But that has to happen. That's called land reclamation. Some city that goes by one name, another city that goes by another. The idea that it's not for blacks is not true, because I know some of these areas that black people move into.
Right. And that's one of the questions that I wanted to bring forth, was because, I mean, here in Atlanta, we have a large number of our older, more established African-American neighborhoods that we've known for the last 80, 90 years that have been African-American. Some of these places were the neighborhoods where if you were an African-American, this was the place to be, because this is where our talented tents live. This is where our doctors, our lawyers live. These are the places, our historical neighborhoods, such as the Auburn Avenue area in the old Fourth Ward here in Atlanta. These are areas in which the Civil Rights Movement.
You're talking about Atlanta City,
and
right?
Headquarters. Yeah, I'm talking about Atlanta, the city.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about these are places where, you know, King and Abernathy and the SCLC and all of these guys sat down and actually planned and moved and their base of operations for the Civil Rights Movement. And we've now seen some people complaining that these areas are now being taken over by whites, and there have been
no white people
in these neighborhoods. But, and you know, again, the question is asked, why? Well,
let me ask you that question. You know why that's like that? You had just, for the last minute, named me some historical places that was very dear to black people.
Right.
Then you put the assertion in there, the day. The days ain't going to take care of your stuff that's dear to you and probably was sour to them. That's black folks' responsibility to do that.
Right, and I'm not going to argue with you on that. I'm not going
to
argue with you on that
real quick. And I really like your city. I like your city. Up there in Detroit, Rosa Parks' house was on the block to be condemned. Rosa Parks' house. It was a white German that disassembled that house, put it in containers, and took it to Germany and worked on it. So blacks got to step forward and do these things themselves. If these things are dear to them, why are you trying to tear down Confederate monuments that's dear to somebody else who built themselves when you got your own things that you don't even take care of? Think about it.
You have an important point of view there. And one of the things that there's one of the questions that somebody asked this person, these are African Americans here in Atlanta, folks who are in leadership, asking, "Whoa, hold on, how are this able to happen now?" Like you said, we've been there for 80 or 90 years. Part of the problem I know, me, and I'm a native Atlantan, born and raised here. A lot of it comes down to the fact that when we started getting money and the ability to move outside of the city, we started heading east and west into the suburbs, buying, you know, $250,000, $300,000 houses not as well constructed as some of the homes that were in the city that had character, that we all looked at it, oh, man, we don't want this old house. But then you had people who seen the value of those old century-old homes, went in, took that money, that the same amount of money we spent to put down on these little mini McMansions out here in the suburbs, and they put money into those homes, modernized them, made them energy efficient, and then took and flipped the house. The house was maybe, you know, $60,000-$70,000. Turned around and flipped the house and made $300,000-$400,000 off the house. And then we wonder why there's an income gap, why there's a wealth gap, because we didn't even recognize that what everybody really wants, we already had. And we was
well,
going
black
to
folks,
and they was telling us we wanted.
Well, you know, in New York, they got them old brownstones. You got people that's going in
right,
there fixing
up
them
Harlem,
up and making them, yeah. So you know you can't make people stay in an area. You know, people are gonna want to go and get the best investment for what they buy. You know, like in the St. Louis area, you had blacks decades ago moved out of the city, and they moved into suburbs and they bought nice homes, and those homes have appreciated in value. But now you got these progressives that's moving people out of the city, which a lot of them happen to be black, who don't have the sustainability to maintain in those nearby areas. You know, when a person move in a house, then when you see their car out on the front street up on blocks where they taking the transmission out and stuff, they don't have the sustainability to maintain that house. Because the first thing you're going to do is make sure your transportation is being taken care of right. And I think that's
and
a crime
do,
because
if,
now.
And if you're a person, and I give you that, and if you're a person who works on cars and this, that, and other, and it's a hobby of yours, you have a shop inside of your garage. In which
inside
you
your garage,
yes,
right.
Right.
And they're not used
right.
to, see, and when you move in the suburbs, you got to pay for your trash to be picked up. When you cut your grass, you don't blow your clippings out in the middle of the street so they can get washed out whenever the heck it rains. And I'm not trying to, but this is what's going on. You have disregard for traffic regulations. You're playing loud. So these blacks that's been living out there, they are suffering. Now they're seeing a plummet of their housing value. That is totally wrong. You shouldn't do that. If you're going to have, there should be areas where you have what you call affordable housing until people can get on their feet and work their way up to the point where they can move into those neighborhoods. You know, here near Ferguson, during the ordeal that they had, there's an area which is north and west of there, which is called Barrington Down. It's a black area where the average house was probably $650,000, $750,000. Them black people basically drew a line and said, "You ain't coming over here with that riding stuff." And they got a right to do that because they're protecting what they have. Their school systems. They do very well in the school system. But people are not going to move in an area where you got bad schools, crime, and you got deplorable services, potholes in the street, and so on like that. They're not going to do that. Blacks deserve to have nice things, too. And they deserve to be able to maintain those things.
Right,
and the thing
right,
I like about
right.
your city is that Maynard Jackson done a damn good job, especially with that airport when he created them black millionaires. That's what he was supposed to do. We talk about that all the time. And I like your city
right, and,
because it is so
and
black.
This is one of the things that we have as a conversation here in Atlanta is because, you know, most of the folks that are here, you know, one thing about being black is that, and that I have appreciated, is that classism doesn't exist as prevalently inside the African-American community as it does in other communities. Because if you are a black person who has wealth, but you still have relatives who live back, quote-unquote, in the hood still, you have connection to them folks still. You still talk to them. You still may even go back home every once in a while and holler at folks. You still go to the barbecue in the neighborhood. We still have connections to all of our roots. So we have a tendency in Atlanta to say, okay, I grew up in that neighborhood. What's going on? And you actually see a concerted effort by some of the younger people who recognize the historical influences that some of these neighborhoods have. Say, you know what? I'm not going to move out to Lithonia, or I'm not going to move out to Stonecrest. I'm not going to move out to, you know, out into the suburbs. I'm going to take my money and I'm going to buy a house here in Atlanta. I'm going to buy a house in the city. I can afford it. I can do it. I understand the investment that I'm making. I understand that it is actually good for me because mostly everybody in the metro area works inside of the city of Atlanta, which that deals with our transportation question. So, you know, it's actually advantageous for you to live in the city. Now, one of the things that has happened, though, is that as some homeowners, and particularly those who own rental property, have realized that there are people who will move into the city and pay extraordinary prices to rent a home in the city. My parents lived in an area called Sylvan Hills. My mother's retired. My father works for the school system in DeKalb County, but they lived in the city of Atlanta. And they found a really nice home, really good rent, this, that, and other, because they was, you know, saying, hey, we're going to downsize. They sold their home, they downsized, and they was like, okay, we know we really don't want to have the, you know, the responsibility of owning a house, which I was okay, cool. That's what y'all want to do, fine. But they had a really good rent. I mean, it wasn't, cheap, but it was good. Well, they figured, the other houses in the area were going, they were paying maybe about $800 a month rent. Okay, nice little house, little, Craftsman bungalow. And the next thing you know, all the other houses in the area are rising up to $1,300, $1,400 a month. Well, the landlord, was like, hey.
You raised the rent.
Yeah, he was like, I'm going to raise the rent because, everybody else around here, getting, $600-$700 more than me. So he told my parents, hey, this is what I'm going to raise the rent. And my parents were like, whoa.
You know what, man? I'm going to tell you something. I think that black people need to move to the suburbs and leave them cities alone. Now, if you got to work in the city, they need to address the issue of transportation, like light rail.
Yeah.
That bring people
right
back into them cities. I can see the blacks. Now this is me, because I bought my grandson attends LSU, and I bought him a condo down there in Baton Rouge. And the first $85,000-$90,000 of property value you pay no taxes on in that state. That's cool. No retirees. No their pension is not taxed. That's cool. Condo, houses are cheap. But in the case of your parents, they done the right thing. They don't need to be in no house where you got to worry about cutting grass and maintaining and all this stuff. I got a daughter, since my grandson is gone, she had a house out there in North County on 5 acres. And I got to get it ready for her to sell because it's too. She don't need no house like that. Got 3 damn fireplaces and a big-ass yard. You got to have riding mower to cut the grass. So let somebody who's raising kids have this. And
right,
get
you
your money
downside,
and go.
Save your money, be able to live a little bit more comfortably during retirement, whatever. But when this guy went up on the rent, my parents moved back, had to find something that they could afford and that they can handle. And then my parents are great tenants. If I had, if I was a landlord and my parents came and said, hey, I want to rent it, because my father is going to make sure the outside of the house is well maintained. He's used to being a homeowner. He takes pride in what the outside of the home looks like. It's going to be great. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
There's not going to be a bunch of wear and tear on the house. My mother is an excellent housekeeper. I mean, landlords go, wow. When they've rented twice since they gotten rid of their home, since they sold a home.
You know what?
And
let me tell you something. Your father and your mother, the time they spend on doing that, they should go to Planet Fitness and keep workout. Leave that work housekeeping and painting and all that stuff alone. That effort, energy, go to Planet Fitness and get a downsize, and the way you don't have to worry about that. I'm telling you, man.
But that's
you
but
don't
tell
worry
you,
about
tell
that
you,
stuff
though,
when you get
but
up.
But for
late.
A lot of older people, but for my father who grew up in rural Georgia, and for him, fun is work. That's what he does. That's his hobby. He goes around. He doesn't have to, and he shouldn't have to. But he goes up on. He gets up on Saturday morning. Loads up his lawnmower on the back of his truck.
Go around
cutting
people's
grass. Yeah.
You know, tell your father to go get him a spot out there in the suburbs. You want to do that? Get him a garden, a big garden out in the backyard.
He does that too. He plants a garden wherever he goes. If he has to build, if he can't tear the yard, he'll build him a little box out there, throw him some soil in it, and grow. That's what he does. That's what he does.
Well, that's a good person, then.
He's
keeping busy.
The thing is, though, you have a lot of older people, just like my parents, who live inside of these neighborhoods. And then some of these neighborhoods, they're not even renting anymore. These people own their houses. They own their houses. They are paid
for. Well, let me ask you something.
For.
They can't enjoy the neighborhood because you got them the crime that's going on. People want to hit them
upside
the head.
I'm talking about in the neighborhoods that have been gentrified already.
Oh, okay.
where the crime level has dropped. The crime level has dropped. They have these wonderful little families around them, and they're actually enjoying it more because they have these diverse neighbors, you know, that are doing what they say always need to be done, take care of the community just like they're doing, and they're being pushed out because the tax rate, now because the housing values have changed, the tax rate has increased, and they can't afford the taxes.
Maybe that should be, you know, you got Russell and you got Mooney, those big contractors that just done the Mercedes Dome. Maybe they need to build some affordable houses out, you know, ways from that. Buy land, the vacant land, build some affordable housing where people can come out there and continue to enjoy their life. Like I say, I like Atlanta.
You know, some of these people, they want to stay in the city. And my thing has always been, okay, I can see us pushing out all the bad actors. You know what I'm saying? I can see that. You know, people who are not taking care of their homes.
It's what they done during the Olympics, didn't they?
Right. You know, but the folks who are, yeah, exactly. But the folks who have been there, pay their taxes, have finished paying for their home. I've always felt like the city, when it comes to older people, and this is even not necessarily the city. This is even in some of the rural counties. You got people who live long, purchased their land, did whatever, need to get some type of break on their property taxes.
I agree with you. They should be like a homestead like they got in Louisiana.
Right. Right, you should get a break on your home.
You're absolutely right.
Now, if you're taking transfer that wealth to your children, you know, and let them inherit that home or whatever. Yes, when the children come in, they need to, your kids or whatever, they coming in and they got kids and this, that, and the other. Yeah, then they should pay property tax because the property tax help pay for the school.
You are absolutely right.
But you know, this is one of the things, but it's not happening. And these are one of the things, because from an affordable housing perspective, it's not always about mortgage and rent. It's sometimes about taxes. And
if you tax people
out of their communities, then it's just as bad as raising the rent on them.
That's what they do around here.
Yeah, people paid. They've paid for their right to live in that home. They spent 15, 30 years in some cases, paying a mortgage on time every month, you know, sometimes refinancing to do, you know, whatever it took to maybe do some improvements or whatever, and paid that off. And they've been good citizens. They've been the rock of that community. They actually, to me, if we're going to gentrify that area and make it more diverse, these people are the people that you want to stay because they anchored that community in its history. And a lot
of
people
move
to these communities because of that history.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, if they want to put up with what it requires to live in that community, then nobody should be able to stop them. But if they don't, those who don't want to stay in there, then they should go and find something else that's more affordable, that's going to allow them to be able to enjoy their life.
Right. You know, and that's been some of the problem, because it was like, there was one case here, we got a neighborhood in which the city was attempting to buy some land to do a flood mitigation project or whatever from another neighborhood that they needed to build a retaining pond in this neighborhood, and there were some houses. And there was like, okay, there were several studies that had been done that said this retaining pond didn't necessarily have to go in this particular spot. It could have went into another spot in which there were no houses. But you wanted to come in. These people have paid for their house, and you offered them below market value. Now, if you're going to buy my house from me, okay, you're going to buy my house from me and don't want me to displace myself, I see it as an affront and an insult to want to pay me
domain,
below.
What they use.
Right. They want, use the intimate domain, and then you want to come in and offer me full market value for my house.
Absolutely. I agree with you.
Offer me full market value for my house. I've been here. I've done what I needed to do to keep maintaining my home. Whatever, I've paid you your taxes, you know, religiously.
Well, that's where your politicians supposed to come in. Who's elected
but they're
politicians?
The ones who, they're the ones that, but you know, and this was before our new mayor. You know, our new mayor has said that she's going to tackle these issues, and not be so and be more transparent about it, because we had a whole lot of transparency issues in the last administration. That, you know, that's a whole other story. You know, oh, I'm so glad that administration is over. But, you know, again, this is a city of that's still majority black, that is still governed in most part by African Americans. So in this situation, we can't necessarily blame white people or Republicans.
No, you can't.
Or this, that, and the other, because this is us. These are black, they Democrats. We, you know, come on now. We,
well, I'm
going to
tell you, now,
Democrat,
now you talking to a person who supported and voted for Donald Trump. I did because of the issues.
Okay, and now, that's a whole other story that I would love to talk to you all. Yeah, go ahead.
I did because of the issues. Tax reform, I mean, what we talking about now, right? Immigration control, better immigration reform. The deal with terrorists, you know, in this area here, they have about four steel mills that's opened up due to tax reform. Two of those closed down in 2005, reopened. U.S. Steel said because of tax reform, the terrorists, that is, tax reform got them going in that way. Because of terrorists, they reopened these steel mills. And you got some foreign companies that's opening up down in the South because of terrorists and tax reform too. Quite a few of them. So that's good. I tell you something else too. Because of the tariff on Canadian lumber, you see where Georgia is now coming back up in the production of plywood and plywood products. They had got away from that. And blacks that own land in Georgia that have timber on it, they should get with the land owning family.
That we sold timber, yeah.
Well, you know what I'm talking about. They should get with the Federal Department of U.S. Department of Agriculture. They would come in and school you on how to turn that land into profitability if it's got timber
right,
on it,
right.
And where you can grow and harvest. So you vote for people because of their issue. Manny Jackson, he's a damn good mayor for what I know of him because of what he done. When he said blacks are going to have this in this airport, he said it. He didn't say he begged and say this is what's going to be.
But I'm right now, since you know that airport begs into our transportation side, because I don't know if you know people in the outside of the Atlanta area understand that our state government is attempting to take the airport from the city of Atlanta, and
I imagine they would.
Yeah, but the fight has been is that, you know, the rest of the state, if you understand Georgia.
I know
Georgia
what's going on.
Is
yeah.
33% of the population of the state of Georgia is African American. The majority of that population sits inside of the city of Atlanta. So politically,
you're right.
we've always had Atlanta versus the rest of the state. And the rest of the you know, if you want to be completely political about it, the blue diamond is Atlanta. If you whatever Democratic power exists only in a few places in Georgia, Atlanta being the major spot. The two, three largest democratically voting counties are in the metro Atlanta area. And
well, you know
got
what?
A lock.
You know what, man? You're going to have to produce you some black Republicans, because you got to play politics with these things. You got to give. To keep what you got, you got to scratch somebody's back. You follow what I'm saying?
But see, the problem is, you understand with us here in Georgia. Now, I don't know about the Republican Party in Missouri or in Kansas or in the Midwest period, but here in Georgia, our Republican Party is our guys and women who used to be what we call Dixiecrats. They were segregationists who then flipped over and became Republicans to maintain power, which they did. You know, we haven't had a Democratic governor in the state of Georgia since 2002. And that was basically, you know, hell, our present governor used to be a damn Democrat, switched over to become a Republican just before he decided he was going to run for governor of Georgia. Thing is that for us, politics has a very deep racial connection. So therefore,
I used to be
a Republican, and I used to be a Republican. But because of the whole race issue that exists inside of the Southern Republican Party, like I said, and I don't know about those. All I can do is speak on what I know here in Georgia. I had to leave that alone.
I vote for Democrats, but I voted for this guy, like I told you, for because of the issues. And you know what the issue is. And I tell you another issue is school. And you say your father worked for the public schools. But see, up here, we need school choice because the schools up here in this area are so bad. And they are in Democratic and school teachers union strongholds. These kids are suffering. It is just a shame what these kids don't get out of the school system. And parents that are doing the right thing, but they ain't able to put their child where it would best suit them. And they need to be able to take their child and go with it. And I ain't saying that all of them, because you got some good schools as traditional schools. But parents that want to put their child in a different environment that best suits their educational goal for their children should be able to do so. Because when you look at what we're producing in the area of scientists, engineers, and those STEM fields, blacks are suffering in those areas. They are. And those are high-paying areas.
Now, but you know, from a person who supports public schools, okay,
mm-hmm.
My thing has always been is that, all right, we know that we have failing schools, all right? We know pretty good what is causing these issues. And, you know, this is why down here in Georgia that I've worked for and continue to support the guy who was running for state school superintendent down here, Ofer Fortin. Because he's a former national PTA president. He's a retired United States Army lieutenant colonel who worked hand in hand with the school system outside of his military base in Maryland. After they got through doing a BRAC, he had all these people coming. All of these soldiers and their families were moving to this area because the military consolidated these bases and moved units into this area. His unit was one of them. And the school system was like, wow, we got a problem. We don't know if we can support all these new kids. And they looked at the army and said, hey, y'all need to help us out. And he happened, this story is so funny to me because he's told it to, full disclosure, I was his first campaign manager. And so we was first talking about this story on why he was running, and he was talking about how he got involved in education, was that it was him and the base commander were in a PTA meeting. And the base commander looked at him and said, well, Colonel, what are you going to do about this? And the colonel, he looked back at the general and was like, okay, I get what you're saying. He volunteered. Because he had kids that were going to go into the school system.
Mm-hmm.
My cousin, you know, we are also related, and my young cousins were going into this school system. And he decided that, yeah, you know what, I need to be involved in this situation. And he worked to get not only the Army, but the other stakeholders, the different businesses, private organizations involved in the school system so they can help bring it up. Now, school choice, now for me, school choice, if it's coming in different forms with inside of that public operation, because like here in Georgia, we have the option of forming public charters that are charter schools that are publicly funded and have loose connections to the public school system. The public school system still has some oversight. But yet they have some freedom to do some innovative things to try to make them. I'm in support of that. Now, if you have a private company that is going to come in and set up schools and receive public money to do that, I don't know about that.
Well, let me tell you something. For instance, we need, like I told you about the modernization of ports. You need blacks that's in marine biology, marine engineering,
right.
marine architecture.
Right.
You have the Department, the Bureau of Labor has said there's going to be a shortage of over 250,000 pilots in commercial aircraft and also military pilots. Well, we need to have more aerospace schools to start preparing children for those jobs. There are
right.
some that do that. And
right.
you need to have Pacific education for Pacific areas of industry that's going
right.
to be kicking off.
Right.
And public schools don't do that. And they can't do it
now,
because there's too many areas.
Here in Georgia, I would say we've made a point toward that because in the county that I – well, my kids are in school at, we have what we call Think Academy. Think Academy is a college career academy, and it's a public school, but it's a public charter. The taxpayers of Troop County pay for the school. It is run by it's run as a separate entity inside the Troop County public school system. It's run as an autonomous entity. The school board has something to say about it, but it's an autonomous entity. But
yeah,
what we understood that there were certain industries that had moved into our area. For instance, we have the Kia Automotive plant in West Point, Georgia, which is in Southern Troop County. When Kia came in there, we didn't necessarily have all of the skill sets needed to be able to employ people from our county in that automotive facility. But now we know, okay, we need robotics. We need people who understood robotics. There's a state-of-the-art robotics lab at Think Academy. My son is in one of those classes. He's a junior in high school. He's dual enrolled. When he graduates from high school next year, he will not only have a high school diploma, but he will have an associate's degree in electrical
Absolutely.
Engineering with an emphasis on robotics. Then he can go on to the next institution, spend 2 years, and have his bachelor's and be able to go in there and do something. Now, if he want to go ahead and take that associate's degree, he could put it to work day one coming out of there and go work for Kia and make $80,000 to $90,000 a year as a 19-year-old.
That's the way it's
supposed to do. And that, you know, and speaking to that, when it comes to, we're talking about affordable housing and transportation, where has that done? People have now started moving into that county. People have started moving in Troop County. Troop County is not a metro county. We are ex-urban. We are rural. We're between the cities of Atlanta and Columbus, Georgia. But we have people moving into that area now because, they got great schools. Where I work in Rockdale County, right outside of Atlanta. They have a career academy similar to Think Academy that they have that is based on trying to teach the kids the trades that are prevalent in the area. My family used to own a corrugated manufacturing facility. We had kids that came from Rockdale Career Academy who came into our manufacturing facility that we taught graphics. We taught them graphic arts. They learned how to do packaging design, all that, and I was one of the on-site instructors because
that's
my job. I was the designer, so they came in. I taught kids how to design packaging. How do you do this? You know, and they were. We have one young lady who's really great graphics designer. She's really really good. She realized that hey, I can do something with this now. And she started a little business on the side in which she does, you know, little designs for folks to put on T-shirts and whatnot and making her some side hustle money.
All those things are possible. Did you know there's charter schools? You got charter school down in the Delta area that's for baseball. You got another one that's in Florida for baseball. You got a charter school in New York for basketball. Then you got one in Arizona, the Arizona Charter School Association Golf Tourney. So if you want to, and of course, like I said, you got those aviation charter schools. You got charter schools that's dealing in medical emergency services. Like when they come out, they go into firefighters and become a paramedic and so on. So yeah, that's the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah, the education that matters. But this is what I'm saying. You know, well, we have this whole idea of school choice and privatizing schools. If we take and make the mandates.
Well, I'm against that because you know what they do? They'll do the same thing that the traditional school was doing. They get the same damn result. I'm not like that. I think that you should have schools that's pertaining to what you area that you're looking into going into.
And that way, because you know, this is how what they do, and this is a part of a European model of education. Because in Germany, you have, you know, the high schools are split into two different types. You got the high school that is college preparatory, and then you have the high school that is based on vocational skills. And I forgot what the German. I think it's gymnasium. One of them is gymnasium, and one is Oberschule.
I went to a technical high school. That technical high school had auto mechanics, aero mechanics, pre-engineer, pre-med, sheet metal, bake shop, cosmetology. It had everything in a public high school.
Right, and that's what we need instead of, you know, everybody. And the one thing that we have agreed, you know, most folks that are supportive of public education have agreed on, most of us, is that every child is not going to go to college. Every child is not going to go to college. Every child doesn't want to go to college. And we need to have a path, a track forward for those who not either they can't afford it or they just don't want to go. They want to go out and be a part of the workforce. It's not anything wrong with not wanting to go get a baccalaureate degree, a master's or a doctorate. It's nothing wrong with saying, hey, I want to go to work. Because we need people who work, but we need them to be skilled and we need them to be efficient. We need for them to be proficient and productive day one. And that's what education is supposed to be anyway. Education is supposed to be about preparation. And when we have great education systems, it allows us to be able to sit there and say, hey, people want to move to your neighborhood, which stabilizes home prices.
Mm-hmm.
That stabilizes your tax base. But when you got sucky schools and everybody's trying to get out of your neighborhood,
they don't want
to
move there.
They don't want to move there. Your tax base falls apart. Then the schools get suckier. Then you start having all these other type of issues, which then always transportation falls into part of that because then you got – now, to me, transportation shouldn't be just about people who don't have cars. It's about trying to keep as many of these cars off the road as possible.
Yeah, absolutely
so
right.
People can move around efficiently. You know,
I agree with.
And I think that's where that argument, and we're starting to see, you know, it always, transportation has been seen for the longest time as a progressive issue. Now you're starting to see conservatives come across to it because they're starting to understand that, hey, guess what? This, because if you frame it about moving poor people around, which was having for the longest time been the acronym that was utilized for the Metro Atlanta Rapid Transportation Authority, known as MARTA. It has always been said one of the joke acronyms was moving Africans rapidly through Atlanta. And people looked at that as a, you know, oh, if we bring MARTA to our community, all it's going to do is bring black
people.
They've
done the same thing with Metrolink in St. Louis, too. But you know, I was just looking at this list. You got a lot of manufacturing that's opening up in Atlanta because of tariffs and other things. You got Georgia Pacific in East Georgia. You got Purina Pet Food in Hartford, Georgia. You got another one here in Georgia, Electrolux in Georgia. But in Alabama, right next to you, you got airlines. Bombardier is doing Airbus in Alabama. You got what else is going on down there in Alabama? You got Mercedes-Benz plant there in Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
Yeah.
You got Toyota, Mazda in Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things that's going on down. Matter of fact, many of these new factories and stuff is opening up in the South, in Nashville, Tennessee.
There's a lot of reason for that. And there's a lot of reason that, for one, we got cheap land. You got cheap
mm-hmm.
land. We got plenty of space for it. You know, if you try to move one of some of these large manufacturing facilities up north somewhere, you're going to be paying premium dollar for the land because you're going to have to build vertically. because you're only going to be given to buy the acreage you need. You're not going to be able to buy a whole bunch of it, so you're going to have to go up. But down here, they can go, and if you're talking about building a vertical manufacturing facility, there's more money that goes into that. Because now you got to be able to move processing from one floor to the next floor. When you can build a one-level manufacturing facility or even a two-level manufacturing facility over several hundred acres, you can do so many processes a lot cheaper than you can if you went vertical. Now, I know a lot of people saying, oh, why don't they do vertical this? Only thing that, you know, some things could work very easily from a vertical standpoint, but when it comes to large-scale manufacturing processes where you have to move heavy stuff, going up and down is not a good thing. You want to stay on the ground. You want to move it
down. Yeah, you're right.
And
the
that's why a lot
I
of folks
want to
come down here because of that. And because the land is cheap. The land, that you know, tax incentives from the different from the different governmental entities that are over those areas. Like, for instance, the Kia manufacturing facility gave Kia a 15-year tax abatement when they moved to Troup County, which some people felt like, okay, we had a lot of people on both sides of the aisle who yelled and screamed bloody murder because you had the conservatives in the area who wasn't getting a tax break on their property taxes, mad because Kia was, and then you had progressives getting mad and progressives and liberals getting mad because that was money coming that they felt that were coming away from the public school system. You know, everybody was mad. But then Kia has come in there, and so much other industry has grown around it. I mean, if downtown LaGrange, there used to be a department store that was declining on our square that finally they closed, and that building was a point of contention for our government. And then finally
Amazon,
they said, hey, they built a nice hotel because of all the stuff that's coming in from Kia and whatnot. They was able to build a hotel on that site, revitalize the square. We now have a resort, a Great Wolf Lodge resort in the city. And it's still, you're looking at it, okay, we have a manufacturing facility spurred tourism. It spurred additional housing development. And at the same time, we've had the median income of the city has risen almost $30,000.
Why come blacks is not getting back into farming down there?
Actually, you know, there is a push for that right now. There is a major push.
Let me tell
push.
You something, man. There's a major need for that. For instance,
right.
Like this deal with China and so forth. China needs to have the ability to produce or get grains because, for instance, they don't have. See, they not one of the major products in China is rice. Then they need soybeans for feeding their livestock. Well, they ain't gonna cut back
right.
on producing rice. They need them soybeans, and
right.
You know, blacks can get into that business
now,
and
I'm
circumvent.
Now, I know you are. You said you vote. You know you vote based on issues. Now here in Georgia, I have a guy by the name of Fred Swan, who is running for agriculture commissioner here in the state. He's a Democrat, and this is one of the things that he's pushing for. He's pushing for not just blacks to get into, rural blacks to get into farming. He's pushing for urban blacks to get into farming because, again, we're talking about these communities where we have gentrification taking place or we need development. He's saying, hey, there are certain farming aspects that can be done in urban areas to bring that food, particularly if we're talking about for domestic consumption. We can
organic
push some of this
food.
Stuff into urban areas. Yes, we can push some of this stuff into urban areas. And African Americans in those neighborhoods need to be on the forefront of that development. And he said, it's just like in the rural area. He said, we need to be on the forefront for that. Another thing that we've talked about, and I don't know how you feel about this or not, but we all know that at some point in time, cannabis is going to become legal.
Oh, heck yeah. Need to get ready for that.
And
now, where's the alcohol?
We're just not even talking about, we're not just talking about raising cannabis for the medicinal or recreational. We're talking about the hemp.
Oh,
you know,
heck yeah.
Hemp is a
hemp
great,
product.
You know, and African Americans, we've been going to jail for the stuff all these years. It's about time that we get on the forefront of being
You're
able
absolutely
to
right.
economically gain from it. Again,
let me ask you something. Where's the Alcorn? Alcorn University is where is it? Is that in Mississippi, isn't it?
I'm not sure. I'm not even
well,
going to lie to you and tell you that.
Universities like Alcorn, universities like Tuskegee will work with your school there.
Alabama,
they
North
will
Carolina,
work.
A&T, the land-grant schools. Yeah.
Land-grant schools. They will. See, that's what I'm talking about, man. I like talking to you. I really do. Because you're up on the issues, and you know the point. It's not about... Look, it's about permanent interest. We don't have to be friends. We're talking about interest. And there's everybody should have an interest in seeing things move forward. And that's what it's all about. And opportunities that exist, like we just got through mentioned, we have to take advantage of them. We need to get more blacks involved in farming, period. Owning land,
right.
Period. Because that
right.
There
not
equates
just in urban
to
areas,
so
much. But in rural areas also.
Absolutely. But look, man, I'm going to get off from here. And,
well, I appreciate you calling. I know you've called before. We've talked and
whatnot. I didn't know that.
Yeah, you have. We've talked before. I mean, I recognize certain callers when they call. When you called,
yeah.
I was like, okay, I know this is the guy from St. Louis. Yeah, because usually you end up getting into it with my co-host. But she's sick today. But you got a free pass today.
Yeah, that's probably
but,
so. Well, see, if I tell people that I vote for Donald Trump, and see, here's the thing, man. This is
such automatically shut down. I'm saying. Now, let me ask you a quick question before you leave. Because, see, I had a theory that I pushed forward before Trump got elected. And I told everybody that if we had more than 8% of African-American men vote for Trump, he would win. The number came up to 13%. I want you to explain to my listeners. As an African-American man, I want you to explain in detail before you leave why, as an black man, did you vote for Donald Trump?
Like I said before, I voted for him because of the issues. And see, I was a business person. I erected structural steel, just like that Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I'd done that stuff here in St. Louis. Been doing that since I was 19 and owned my own business doing it, putting up office buildings and so forth. I've been to the mountaintop. And when I've been to the mountaintop, I'm coming back and saying, this is what you need to be doing. But see, the problem is people don't want to listen. I may not know all the things, but I know a lot of the things. And, you know, they always say that blacks don't come back and help those. Well, we do, but we get shut down. In many of the cases of time, when you go in there and trying to change some of these long entrenched political stances, the way things are, you have to fight for that stuff, and it's really needlessly, and frankly, people get tired of it. Why in the world should I be trying to fight somebody to tell them information for free when some people would go out and have to pay for this information? No, I've been to the mountaintop. I've seen what's going on. I see what's coming down the pipe. I put my grandson. See, I told my grandson what he was going to do. I said, you're going to be an engineer. He's in his 21. He's a senior down there at the flagship in Louisiana, and he's doing gas and petroleum business with an energy minor, double major. Plus, he plays baseball. So we don't see the things that need to be done, but people just don't like to listen because they entrench. And not only that, they are profiting off of the dismal failure of your kids in school. In many cases of the time, it's dismal failure, and it is a total shame. It's a shame.
Well, and I think at this point, I wish my co-host was here because I think at some point she would agree because we both, you know, we're talking about doing a show later on here about what we call the political industrial complex, in which, and it exists on both sides, in which certain issues are promoted and pushed and lobbied for these different organizations, these different firms to make money. But no, it's kind of like pharmaceutical companies. I'm not trying to find the cure because it's so much money to be made in profitability in treatment. You know, why would I solve a problem that I'm making millions of dollars off of treating or speaking on when you don't see the possibility in actually solving the issue.
You're absolutely right.
You know,
and I'll tell you something else.
And that takes place both on the conservative side and on the progressive side, where we have people who are making money off of discord. The chaos is making the money.
And see, here's another thing. You got a person at that high level of office is telling immigrants that's here on work visa, that's in these high technical fields and medical fields, when your visa expires, you got to go home. And we're going to train Americans for those jobs. That's why come you have so many doctors that's coming from India. Because back in the 40s, they planned for this. Engineers and doctors, they planned for this back in the 40s with them technical ventures into education. They had the Indian technology schools. So blacks need to get their kids productive. See, I erected structural steel. I don't need an employee that can run a 4-second 40. You know what I'm saying? I need employees that's highly intelligent in math and engineering, especially structural engineering when I was doing my business. And that's what it is. Now, I ain't saying there's nothing wrong with sports. The only thing I see wrong with sports is that you got blacks that's playing football and basketball, bringing in revenue into the schools, that's providing scholarships for other sports that blacks don't even go out for. That's totally ridiculous. Totally ridiculous.
Yeah, because you basically farming. You're farming our young men and some of our young women to educate people who not even gonna get that education. They don't benefit our community.
You're right, and like these activities, like you got football players that's kneeling. These football players have money managers that's managing their money, investing their money into investment firms like Vanguard, J.P. Morgan, BlackRock, who turn around and trying to get the greatest return for their client's investment because they have a fiduciary duty to do so. They're investing in corporations like Corrections Corporations of America, NEO in Florida. They're investing in private prisons. But at the same time,
you don't have any problem with them kneeling, but you're saying that they need to have an idea of why they're supporting that. They need to be checking their portfolios, because even though you're kneeling, your portfolio and your money is supporting this industry.
Well, that's what I'm saying, and I think that the kneeling, that's a whole different story, because like I told you before, in Ferguson, blacks got the power to stop their police from abusing them because they are the boss. Police officers are employees. If you don't want your employees doing those things, then set policies and say, you don't do this, and if you do, you're going to get fired. Now, in big cities like Chicago and New York, they may don't have that ability, because you're talking about 35,000 police officers in New York. That's a political block right there. But in most of these small towns, blacks already have the power to control their police department. You don't want them engaging in high-speed chase and say you don't do that. If you want them to behave in a different manner when they come down to a situation where they think their life is being threatened, then they should retreat and call for backup. Then approach
and I think that's one of the things that we need to teach our community as a whole, is that when we elect people to these government positions, that's what we're electing them to do, is to govern over all of these entities. If you have a police, the police chief is usually hired by the city government to manage that police force. And if that police force does not serve your community properly, then you need to
get rid of
your elected officials to remove him and put somebody in charge that is going to institute policies that are good for your community.
Right.
If they don't do that, you don't get reelected. We run people against you that will do the job. And a lot of
look how you done. Look how Atlanta done with their school guards. You went out in the community, into the classroom, and start training people to fill those positions. That way that money stays in that community. You ain't got people coming from miles around working in those jobs, taking the money and also the pension back out miles around. That's supposed to be for your children. That's supposed to stay there.
Well, I appreciate
there's a lot of things. But anyway, look, man, I got to get going.
All right. Well, I appreciate you calling in. You know, you're welcome to call back in anytime you want.
Absolutely. And good luck to you. And keep up the good work.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We had an interesting talk there. I mean, we covered a lot of different little stuff right there. Just talking to that was an African American who was a conservative, voted for Trump. But as you see, we had a lot of similar solutions to some of these problems, which is uplifting our own community to do the work. And a lot of times, we as progressives, particularly in African American spaces, are not necessarily thinking it all the way through, and we got people from other spaces coming in, speaking to us, telling us what we ought to do, and it's actually not benefiting us. That was a good conversation. I've talked to Stacey. Stacey's not feeling well today, everybody, so everybody send prayers and positive energy toward my co-host. She's not feeling well today. I knew something had to be wrong, because for us to have, you know, she usually is calling me, reminding me that, hey, bruh, are you ready? Are you ready to go? Are you ready to do something? And I'm usually like, yeah, okay, let's go, let's do this. And for her not to be here is, you know, one part of the sky is not being held up today. So everybody send some positive energy towards Stacey Hopkins today, because she's not feeling well. And, you know, we let everybody know that we miss her. But that was a very interesting, like I said, very interesting conversation we just had about, because a lot of our issues, the word is, you know, that I hear you use a lot, that's used a lot in activist circles, intersectional. You know, gentrification, economics, race, all of that stuff, class, all of that stuff mixed in together. We have none of these issues sit in bubbles by themselves. Even when we get to talking about certain social issues or certain crime issues, they are exacerbated and fed by other issues. So we have to look at these issues holistically. We have to look at how they wrap around each other, and that's how we're going to solve these issues. You know, we talked about the affordable housing problem. We got not just people being not being able to find affordable housing within price ranges they can afford to pay, but we also have a problem where people are not being able to pay the property taxes on homes they already own that are being pushed out. Nobody's thinking about our elderly, our seniors that are in these communities. These people are the anchors to these communities. And a lot of people move to these communities because of the historical significance. You know, Old Fourth Ward, Auburn Avenue, Sylvan Hills, Adair Park, all these places have names because they have historical significance. And one of the things we look at is that these older people were there to witness that history. I mean, we need to cherish the history that they have inside of them, because the newer families that are moving in, the children can really benefit from these older people being able to tell us the stories about what this neighborhood used to be in its heyday, and how we now have an opportunity to have a more diverse, more robust community. But when we have gentrification taking place, we kind of losing that ability to have this perfect situation. Because I know a lot of us would love to live in communities where our neighbors and businesses are thriving, and we have this wonderful synergy that moves through our communities, that we have older people, younger people, business. We have all people from all types of life living amongst each other in semi-harmonious ways. And it's possible. Now, one of the negative effects of gentrification is that we have people who move into these communities and don't necessarily understand some of the cultural practices that are there, because they just don't understand. I mean, you can just look at, there's this thing, and I know a lot of you pay attention to, some of you may not even know it exists. It's called Nextdoor. It's an online social media platform. And you can see some of the most heinous, bigoted, and racial statements being made in some of these gentrifying communities from the newcomers about the people that are there. If you live in, if you come into a neighborhood that is primarily African American, you're going to see young men, African American men with hoodies, walking around all times of day and night. They've been doing this for years. There's nothing dangerous going on. Some of them are going to work. Some of them are going to friends. They have, you know, it's just what it is. Everybody's not out trying to do something nefarious. And you don't realize that you calling the police and doing that is actually putting these people in jeopardy, because if I promise you, if you're progressive, you've all heard stories about how you heard stories, you even believe the stories of the danger that the police present to African-American people, to brown people. So why would you put us in situations? If I don't see you actually doing something, I'm not calling the cops. Why? You doing something suspicious. I don't understand. You know, some of your suspicion comes from a very dark and sunken place, and we need to deal with it. And that same thing falls over into transportation. People don't want mass transit coming into their neighborhood because they believe it's going to bring the nefarious people. I promise you, if I live in the Swats, it is no way in hell I want to go to Lilburn. Lilburn is a dangerous place to me. I don't know anybody out there. I don't understand the culture. I'm not coming out there. But people in Lilburn want to come to the city because you work here, you play here. All the fun stuff is, all the fun and meaningful stuff is inside the city. Why should you have to pay, you know, high gas prices and spend time sitting in traffic when you could zoom into the city and maximize your time either working or having fun, because we have proper mass transit options in Metro Atlanta? It would be such a wonderful thing. So we have so many opportunities to be able to take affordable housing and transportation to the next level. I'm really wish Stacey was, because we had a whole bunch of different conversations that we had, counterpoint, counterpunch, that goes into this situation. But one of the things that is irking, that she spoke on, that was irking her, is that we are talking about transportation options into Cobb County, into Gwinnett County, and into these outlying counties, that we are ready to move on today, but we have not fulfilled the promise to the in-town folks that we campaigned to for these funds, the people that we have lobbied for these funds. You know, we talked about having a line that went through Clayton, a train line that went from Clayton all the way into Henry, all the way to Lovejoy. We've talked about, you know, some of the different lines that we need to be able to touch certain communities here in Fulton and DeKalb. Because originally, folks in Fulton and DeKalb have been paying for MARTA access since the 70s and still have not realized the full promise of that situation. I mean, the closest train station, the farthest the train station goes into East Metro is Indian Creek. Indian Creek train station is on 285, like right off of 285. So you don't even go a whole mile OTP with a train station. The same thing going west. Same thing going west. You get to homes, or what we used to call back in the day, Hightower Station, it is less than a mile from 285. You can't even get OTP going west. How if you go south, you go to the airport, you're what again? Maybe a mile, 2 miles, OTP. Same thing heading north. Now, going north, you might get, I think there may be two, three stations. Let me look at the map. Let me pull up a Martyr's map because this is very significant to the whole transportation problem that we have here in Atlanta, because we have a significant portion of our community that lives OTP, and you don't even have proper transportation for that. Now, I'm pulling up the map now. Whoa, there's a bunch of them. Wow. Okay, now, you get stations. How many stations is this going above the perimeter? Hold on, this is not the map that I want. Okay, we have three stations northbound that are outside the perimeter. You got North Springs, Sandy Springs, and the Dunwoody station. Okay? You have no other station other than Indian Creek that is outside 285. Atlanta Airport Station doesn't even go outside of 285. MARTA is strictly ITP until you go north. Why is that? I mean, we wonder why we have the traffic problems that we have, because if let's say you're going from Wesley Chapel or Panola, or better yet, Sigmund Road, West Avenue, the second Sigmund Road, where we have the backup that goes down the East Expressway, you see the backup all the way to 285. That's where the traffic breaks off at. You have clear running almost once you hit 285 on all points coming in. So why is it that so it looks like you want me to go to Indian Creek, catch a train. How about if we had a train station that was close to the exits or major points of access near Wesley Chapel, near Panola, near Turner Hill, near Sigmund, going out east. And so people could come in, because all you can do now is catch a girdle into the city, and it'll take you all the way to 5 points, and you're good. But that bus can still get stuck in traffic. You're taking a mass transit solution, and you're sticking it in the artery that is already congested, when you could utilize trains so much easier. We want more money to be given to MARTA so that they can look for transportation options to go into Cobb County and Gwinnett. We're talking 85 north, 75 north, but what about the folks who live on 75 south, 85 south, 20 east, and 20 west? And then when you look at the red line, there's a MARTA, it goes straight up down 400. And why is that? Because these lines were built when 400 still had a toll road. So we actually built lanes to give people an additional route around the toll to get into the city. So they wouldn't have – people who already have money were given an option to save money to get into the city. What the hell, people? Come on now. We really need to have a conversation about proper and decent transportation in the city of Atlanta. And I'm sure that if I'm starting to look at other transportation in other cities, you know, I'm looking at them, pulling up the D.C. Metro map right now, just to kind of get a good idea of how that system even operates, the Metro. Pulling that map up now. But I remember when I lived in D.C. for the short period of time that I did, that it was a pretty decent system. Now I'm looking at this map, and it's like, wow, there's train lines all over the damn place. I mean, seriously, they got like 6, 7 different lines. Now, they have the same problem, it seems, that we have. There's an outer perimeter, the Capitol Beltway, that exists, that's supposed to be the bypass to D.C. Their train stations go to that point. Now, you still have some that they do a little bit better job of going out into Maryland than they do going into Virginia, but and there's more stations, you know, and actually, hell, there's even spots here where you see Amtrak. If you look at the DC line here, if you get to the Rockville station, going up the red line, one of their red lines, going down that red line, you can actually get to the Maryland BART system, and you can actually get on Amtrak. Hell, you can go to the New Carlton on the Orange Line, and you can catch Amtrak there. You can get to both of the local airports from the train station. Let's see. Oh, there's a third Amtrak line at Union Station. I mean, hell, another one at Kingstown in Alexandria. You can't even, if you wanted to, you can catch Amtrak from MARTA that you can get on Greyhound from MARTA, because it will stop you at the Garnett station, which the Greyhound station is right there. But the train going northbound that will get you closest to the Amtrak station would be the Midtown station. You would have thought that when we built our trains that we would have wanted Atlanta should have a union station type situation where you have multimodal options where you can catch the train, the bus, or Amtrak from the same damn spot. Seamless transportation options. I mean, that's what somebody in the state legislature need to see by where that will cost. You know, how do we move everything? Because the hard thing would probably be to move Amtrak. But what would it take for us to be able to connect these situations? Because how far is the next, you know, I'm going to look this up because this is interesting. But how far would it take, what would it take to me to move people from that Amtrak station to a MARTA station? And what would it take for that to move the Greyhound station or to make a second Greyhound station that you could get on a Greyhound bus from there, giving us seamless transportation? I mean, even if we didn't do nothing but build a moving sidewalk, tunnel, tram system from the closest MARTA train station to the Amtrak site, I mean, what would it take? We need to be looking at viable options that would give us the ability to make Atlanta transportation friendly. You know, it's a lot to think about, because we have a serious traffic issue that is just crazy. There was a story that came out in the AJC, I think it was yesterday or this morning, because it showed up in my daily morning briefing, and it had to deal with traffic in Atlanta, and we were like we were in the top 10 of cities globally, now not nationally, globally, when it comes to our traffic situation. Now that is crazy. When you look at the other cities that's on the list, it's like, it is no way we should be on this list. No way. Not at all. And I'm trying to pull up this story now so I can bring it to y'all, because it was interesting in itself just how that operated. Let me see if I can pull this story up, because it was a good story. because, I mean, we're talking about, we are on the same list with cities like London, São Paulo, New York. And to me, it was like, really? We on this list here? Like, why would we be on this list? It was like crazy that we found ourselves on this list. I'm looking still. But it's a, you know, it was crazy that we ended up on this list. And I'm still looking. Because it was mad crazy. Okay, here it is. Sick along community. These 20 cities have the worst traffic. There it is. All right. Now, it was just crazy that we ended up on this list. And one of the reasons, and the thing is that a lot of these other cities have way more people than we have. We're talking about cities like New York and Washington. New York and London have, you know, inside of their city limits, 10 million people. The whole metro area isn't, you know, it's like it right at 10. I mean, so it's crazy that we find ourselves on this list, because it was like, whoa, how do you, because we're like number four in the state, in the United States, for its traffic. And there are cities that, like Chicago, who are lower on this list than we are. It's just mad crazy. Now, in this one story, that it gives us number 12, and I'm trying to figure out why, you know, we got two conflicting news stories here. While a tenth of Atlanta's workers currently rely on public transportation, the city system is a divisive talking point. Plans to extend public transit is a goal, but suburban and rural residents of the greater area are concerned with the compromise, where they will compromise the character of their communities. You know what that means. They're afraid the inner city folks are going to come out. But with traffic conditions at levels at an average of 27%, expanded transit options projected to ease traffic on local freeways. That's not the story that I'm looking for. We're still looking here, because that was one that it was really like, it had me tripped out. I just got it this morning. Where is it? But you have a list that really just, I mean, it's just crazy. When you got cities like Atlanta, São Paulo, I mean, foreign cities that we should not be on that list. Hold on a second. Let me, while I look for this, we're going to do a little, interlude.
Your information, a lot of my brothers got education. Now check it. You got your Wall Street brother, your blue collar brother. You're down for whatever, chilling on the corner, brother. A talented brother. And to every one of y'all behind bars, you know that Angie loves you. But my black brother,
Atlantaintownpaper.com, posted on February 6th, 2008. Byline is by Colin Kelly. Table number 3. 10 most congested cities in the world in 2017. Number 1 city, global city, was Los Angeles. Hours spent in congestion in 2017, 102 hours in Los Angeles. Percentage of total drive time and congestion, 12% of their time. Number 2 city in the world is Moscow. 91 hours spent in their car, 26% of their time is spent in congestion. A tie for number 2 is New York City, 91 hours, 13% time spent in congestion. Number 4 city, São Paulo, Brazil, 86 hours, 22% of their time is spent in congestion. San Francisco, 79 hours, 12% of their time is spent there. Number 6 city, Bogota, Colombia, 75 hours spent in congestion, 30% of their time is spent in traffic. London, England, the United Kingdom, 74 hours, 13% of their time. Number 8 is Atlanta, Georgia, 70 hours spent in the car, 10% of our time spent in congestion. Number 9, Paris, France, 69 hours, 13%. And the number 10 city on this list was Miami, Florida, at 64 hours, 9%. Now, I'm trying to figure out, how does Atlanta, because most of these cities that are mentioned have populations that are way larger than ours. Way larger than ours. I'm like, you know, it doesn't make any sense. When you look at the size of London, when you look at the size of Paris, when you look at the size of cities like San Francisco and New York and Los Angeles, Atlanta, Paris, Sao Paulo is a very popular city, Bogota. We do not have that population. Even when you look at the combined metro area, which they say is somewhere around 5-6 million people, you know, some estimates say 10, but there's only 15 million people in the state of Georgia. We got some of these cities that have more people in them than the whole damn state of Georgia. I can understand them having traffic. I can understand New York having traffic. That's an island with a couple of million people on it. I can understand Los Angeles. You know, and Los Angeles suffers from one of the same problems that Atlanta suffers from, which is sprawl. But they have a larger population. San Francisco sits on the bay, on that peninsula, real tight. I can understand that traffic. London, old city. I can understand that. Paris, old city. I can understand it. Moscow, old city. I can understand that. Atlanta, don't understand. Young city. A city that, you know, and to be understanding and to be truthful, you know, you would actually think that Moscow and London and Paris, well, particularly Moscow and London, would have been able to mitigate their problems because both of their cities were nearly damn destroyed in the Second World War. You could have built your way out of that. And in some ways, some of the stuff that they have for their transportation system were linked into their rebuilding. Atlanta has a very similar situation. We were one of the few American cities that has ever been affected by warfare. You know, Atlanta was burnt to the damn ground, completely destroyed in 1865. And we just, you know, if you look at it, just really finished the Reconstruction era of the city in the late 1940s, early 1950s. So we have growth potential and ability to do something about that in major forms of mass transit. You look at stuff like the Beltline. You look at stuff like the Atlanta Streetcar. All of these situations are supposed to be things that were to drive people away from their cars. But really what we're having is the Beltline ain't nothing but an attraction for people to drive into the city, to walk and ride bikes around the city. And but still they got to get in their cars and come down 75, 85, and 20 to get into the city. Whereas if we had real transportation options, we would find ourselves having people being able to catch a train in their neighborhood, park their car there, so their car never makes it to 20 or 85 or 75 or 285. And they can go into the city center, and then they can walk the Beltline or whatever else they want to. But right now, the option is you coming into, you still have to get on 85, 75, 285, or 20 to get to a train station because they're mostly inside of the perimeter. So we're losing options. So that option really doesn't, because we still got people spending 30 minutes just to move 10 miles from the suburbs to 285. Even this morning, if you look at a traffic map that you can find on Google, this morning, there's traffic. Let's see. Right now, the major traffic areas are 78 coming out of Stone Mountain to 285, and there's a little traffic. It looks like Memorial Drive. Yep, that's look like Memorial Drive. Then you got traffic between Tucker and what? You go just north of Tucker. You got the traffic up near Spaghetti Junction. I mean, Sandy Springs. You got traffic on the connector. Seriously, and a lot of this could be alleviated by somebody jumping there behind on a train. there's congestion in downtown Atlanta right now that just looks ugly. It's just slow. I mean, right now the major arteries are clear because right now it's 11:35. You know, folks are at church, which usually most people go to church somewhere close to home. And if you look at these, probably where these congested areas are on the surface streets, they're probably close by because churches are getting ready to be let out. But other than that, what is the what's the problem with us having a major transportation system that will afford us the type of lifestyle that we are looking for in Atlanta? Atlanta's growing very rapidly. We need to talk about these problems and not just talk about it and allocate money, but start doing something. And if you look at how Boston did the Big Dig, they tried to do whatever they needed to do without causing major gridlock. And it may have not have worked to the full capability, but they thought about it. How do we think about doing this in Atlanta without making it worse for the next 10 years? And it doesn't have to take forever. You know, we can, if we wanted to, we could build these structures and make it happen in a few years. When we lost that major section of 75, people thought we were going to be down for a year, rebuilding that section of 75 after the 75 collapse. But 2 months later, we had a road up. Why? Because we put our energy and our effort toward it. This could be like sending man to the moon in Atlanta. How do we, in the next 5 years, build out and make it happen? What it will take is the political will to push it. And everybody think about the common good instead of about their own political agendas, because that's what will hold it up. People will politically grandstand to hold up the effort. So we really need to push forward, make this happen in a big way, because this is the only way the city is going to continue to survive. And that's pretty much it. We need to find ways, just a recap, we need to find ways to keep our older citizens in their communities, in their homes that they bought, they love, they cherish, and be able to find ways for them to be able to stay home, how that they can become anchors in these communities as they become more diverse. I don't think we are against diversity, but what we are for is displacing people from their communities, drawing communities, and the cultural and historical significance of these communities. I think that we want transportation options, but again, we have to get past the bigotry and the misinformation and to understand culturally where people are, because be honest with you, folks from the inner city is not going to bring their behinds out here to rob and steal, kill and pillage. That is not how crime works. Crime works next door. The joker that's stealing from you lives in your neighborhood. The joker that kills you lives in your neighborhood. People do not travel into unknown territory committing crimes. The FBI will tell you that in their crime statistics. Every serial killer we've ever seen has lived within a certain mile radius of all of his victims. If you look at most crime, it's committed in a certain mile radius of the people who commit those crimes. The people who commit crimes in your community already live with you. Nobody's going to go into foreign territory where they are not familiar with the lay of the land to go out there and commit crimes. It's not going to happen. So that what we want is you, the people of the Atlanta area, to be able to come work and have fun and spend the majority of your time doing that versus sitting in the car all day. You don't want to sit in the car all day. You want to be on the Beltline having fun. You want to be down at Mark Mercedes-Benz when the Falcons play, when Atlanta United plays. You want to be able to get to SunTrust Park from anywhere in the city and watch the Braves play. We want to be able to get down to GSU and watch the Panthers play, or get to Georgia Tech and watch the Yellow Jackets play. It would be nice if we had options that could get us to Athens and we can get between the hedges. it would be nice if we had options, transportation options that allow people that we can connect to Chattanooga and Charlotte and Birmingham, and so that we could take part as a regional southern thing and be able to, folks could work that way. People from Columbus can work in Atlanta. Atlanta people could go work in Columbus. People in between could get jobs in all these places. It will be, that would be the optimum situation. With that said, we need to continue to have this conversation in our county commissions, city halls, with our boards of education. We need to pay attention when we vote. As the gentleman who was on the phone earlier, who was a conservative, said that we control these issues as people, because all of these different situations have a government component. We elect the people who control those decisions. If they don't do what we want them to do, we vote them out. This is a time for us to go vote. We need to vote, because the state of the republic depends on it. It's okay to protest and bring light. It is okay to advocate and bring light. But none of these things change until we make it to the ballot box and we hold our elected officials accountable. This is Down South and Dirty. Everybody, practice Stacy. Hope she be back next Sunday. And we out. Peace.